In the report this week, Phil Kemp investigates whether banks are facing another mis-selling scandal with interest rate swaps.
Last night's Today programme lecture by the Governor of the Bank of England, Sir Mervyn King, was a reminder, if any were needed, that the repercussions of what he called our bad banking situation are still being felt. He spoke of a financial system that had overextended itself and grown too quickly, and said they should have warned that light-touch regulation had failed to prevent it happening. Tonight we investigate claims about another form of banking excess, this time over claims they sold inappropriate products like interest rate swaps to small businesses to protect them against potential rate rises. Over the past few months, a steady stream of cases has made the headlines.
Caught in the trap. I trusted the bank and saw it just like a house mortgage.
High Street Bank stand accused of exploiting small businesses.
This product was not right for my business.
Tonight we hear from businesses facing crippling bills because of deals they say the banks made them sign when taking out loans.
These interest rates are meant to be protecting us and they're killing me.
We hear from former bankers about how the odds were often stacked against their customers.
Every case I look at, there's something. It's like sort of the Wild West, really.
And we examine how major public sector institutions from Italy to the US have also lost millions on bad hedging contracts.
This lady would like a chicken, please, if you can cut it up, and skin off, please.
OK, no problem.
Wahida Bashir and her family have prepared and sold halal meat from their shop in Ilford, East London, since the early 90s.
229. There you go.
In 2006, the business borrowed more than £1 million to expand their premises by buying up neighbouring property. But Wahida says there was a string attached to their loan.
A gentleman from Barclays Bank came and saw my brother at the back of our meat shop and showed him a presentation and said, these are rate swaps and they are very, very good for you. And, you know, you have to sign these rate swaps.
And this was as a condition of receiving a loan from Barclays?
Yes, it was a condition that he has to sign this, otherwise they would pull the loan in. They didn't tell us the risks of it. We were told that they would protect us from fluctuations and that when the interest rates went up, that we would be protected.
The back of an East London meat shop may seem an unlikely venue for a discussion about complicated hedging products, a type of derivative designed by City rocket scientists. But Superfresh Halal joins the ranks of bed and breakfasts, pubs and even a fish and chip shop in claiming to have been missold them by their bank. Experts now advising the butchers say the main product they'd signed up for was something known in the jargon as an amortising collar with additional knock-in digital floor. And if that sounds complicated, well, that's because it is complicated.
Right, Smita, as my producer, this is quite complex, so I really think two heads might be better than one on this.
Well, look, if you can explain it to me, you can explain it to anyone. So basically, if I've got this right, Superfresh Halal had a variable rate on their loan.
That's right. And it was for 1.35% above the base rate.
OK, I've got that. But they also had this collar, didn't they? What was that for?
Well, that was their protection against rates going up too high. Basically, their agreement said they'd never pay more than 5.75%, even if the base rate rose above that level.
So what was the problem?
Well, we all know that rates fell, didn't they?
Well, yes. But didn't that mean they benefited from that?
No. In fact, if rates drop below 4.25% and they continue to fall, Superfresh Halal actually paid more the lower the base rate went.
So it was almost like a one-way bet for them.
Yeah, and it was a bet they lost.
Interest rates have gone down. Literally, our mortgage has gone so sky high that we just can't do it no more. We had to beg, borrow, sell our valuable possessions and just literally try to stay alive. We've not been able to use our sales because our sales have totally dropped.
To be fair, you weren't being forced to take this loan, though, were you? You could have sought a better deal with another bank that didn't require you to hedge in this way.
We could have gone to another bank, but we wasn't able to get any other loan facility anywhere else. So we had to go to Barclays, which we was approved a loan. But the condition of the loan was that we had to go to these swaps.
What have you been told about how much this might cost you to get out of this?
To get out of this, we're looking at £568,165 to break this hedge in.
on a loan of how much?
£1.5 million.
More than a third of the cost of the underlying loan?
Yes.
Can you afford that?
No. I can't afford that, no.
Do you think that you were ever in a position to understand this type of product?
I honestly do not understand it. To me, it's a whole lot of gobbledygook. I've tried and tried to read it, but I don't understand how it can work like that. These interest rates are meant to be protecting us and they're killing me.
It's important to say that the £568,000 cost of getting out of the swap is not profit to the bank, although it will include an administration charge. The bank makes its money at the point that the product is sold by selling it on to the market. So it has to compensate for all the money the meat shop would have carried on paying, based on present rates, had the deal not been broken early. All Wahida knows is that as the Bank of England has kept rates at 0.5%, in part to help struggling businesses, ironically her family have ended up owing more. After Barclays increase the interest they have to pay on their loan, combined with the payments they're making on their hedging product, they're now being charged an effective net interest of more than 9%. Barclays has appointed receivers because of Superfresh Halal's inability to keep up with their payments, but Wahida and her family have so far been able to stay open with the help of solicitors at the London-based firm Lex Law. Mohammed Ali Akram is their solicitor.
The structured collar is possibly one of the most complex financial derivatives that could have been sold. And one of the features of this case is that the customer of the bank was possibly one of the least sophisticated customers that the most complex product could have been sold to.
So you would argue it was inappropriate because of that?
Absolutely. Even professionals for whom we act have had real difficulties in understanding these products being sold to them. So for a small business, for an SME with no access to financial information, no access to market information and no financial advice or even accounting advice on these products, it would have been an impossible process for them to understand what was being sold to them. It's very typical of these cases that the banks would force their SME customers who simply wanted loans and perhaps fixed-rate loan products, which had been far more suitable for them, but they would force them into complex derivatives.
We asked Barclays about Superfresh Halal's case, but because there's ongoing legal proceedings, they said they couldn't comment. But they said they denied the allegations made to date and would defend the legal action. In a statement, they said,
Barclays is satisfied that it provides sufficient information to enable a client to make an informed commercial decision about the products it offers. We encourage any clients who have concerns about any of the services we provide to contact us directly. If a client chooses to approach the Financial Ombudsman Service, then we participate fully in that process. To date, a very high percentage of the complaints against Barclays in respect of the sale of interest rate swaps were found to be in our favour.
It's not just Barclays which is facing mis-selling claims. The Financial Ombudsman Service told us they receive a handful of complaints on a regular basis about this form of lending involving several different banks. They said they couldn't comment on Barclays' claim about the number of complaints being found in their favour. Most experts we spoke to agreed that hedging products like interest rate swaps can be a sensible way for small businesses to manage risk. Shortajit Das, a former derivative salesman and the author of Extreme Money, explains why.
The reason interest rate swaps have an economic use is they can be used to manage rates. In other words, what you can do is fix your interest rates using these instruments, which means you're not subject to future rises in interest rates or the uncertainty in terms of your own interest costs and so forth. Similarly, it also helps you actually match your income and your outgoings. So both of these functions are essential, normal risk management functions, which are quite legitimate. And they actually help people in terms of reducing risk. And so they're perfectly logical things to do.
But how did we get to a situation where such complex financial products were being sold to chippies and meat shops?
We've taken these products, and as they've become more and more standardised and easier to trade, we've pushed them down into less sophisticated or less large clients. These people are less sophisticated, they have less knowledge, and they're less price sensitive. And they usually do not have the ability, as a large investor or a large corporation would generally have, The smaller ones don't have that expertise, which means the profit margins that the banks can earn is much greater. We have seen this particular product pushed down, some would argue, into groups of borrowers and investors who never should do them.
Several consultancy firms have now sprung up to advise small businesses which believe they've been the victims of mis-selling. Some of these consultants are themselves former derivative salesmen, among them Martin Barclay, who now works for Vedanta Hedging. I asked him about some of the worst cases on his books.
People that don't speak English, being sold these things. People that have been taken into a meeting and said, right, we're going to speak to some guy in London, just say yes to everything. People that are blatantly lying to clients, say that the market is doing one thing, i.e. wanting them to trade now, when actually the market's doing something else. Every case I look at, there's something. It's like sort of the Wild West, really.
This is Heaton Moor Village.
And how many properties do you have?
About 25.
How long has that taken to grow to that sort of size?
From the mid-90s, I started doing it the old-fashioned way, saving up for a deposit and putting it down a property and then saving up for the deposit again and buying another property.
Manchester-based buy-to-let landlord Des O'Malley was always careful not to overstretch himself when buying property to allow for any unexpected rate rises. But when he decided to borrow money from RBS to expand his business in 2007, he says they still required him to take out a hedging product as protection.
Once we'd gone through the process of identifying that, they were prepared to lend me the million. So we had a bit of an arm wrestle, a bit of a negotiation on the margin. We agreed on that. At that stage, he said that the RBS would require me to hedge the million.
And when he said that, did you have any experience of that? Did you know what he was talking about?
I thought a hedge was something at the end of a garden, to be honest with you. No, but he said he'd introduce me to the sales girl in that department and she'd go through the options with me.
So, as you recall it, was this a condition of the loan? Were they telling you you absolutely had to do this, otherwise you wouldn't get your £1 million?
Yes, in effect, yeah.
In effect, or that
no,
is what
yes,
they said?
That is what they said. It was a policy of the RBS that they would require me to hedge.
RBS denies the claim that they required Des O'Malley's company to enter into a swap to get his loan, or that he was misled into thinking this was a precondition.
Right, Smita, I need your help again.
I was hoping you weren't going to say that.
Right, I've got Des's agreement here, and this one's different from the Halal Butchers. His is something called a callable dual base rate swap.
So what protection did that one give him?
Well, this one said he'd pay no more than 6.95% in total, even if the base rate went up beyond that figure.
I get that, but we know from the other case we've looked at that you have to look at what the agreement says will happen if rates are cut as well.
Well, if rates dip below a certain level, in this case it's 3.75%, well, then Des would also have to pay that higher fixed rate of 6.95%.
And I suppose the point is, back when he signed this in 2007, the idea that rates were going to go down just wasn't on the cards, was it? People were only really worrying about rates going up.
Exactly.
You can see from my emails to the RBS when the panic started setting in, that goes back to kind of early 09, when the interest rates plummeted down to, you know, where they are now, 0.5%.
And at this point, most people would be enjoying the fact that rates were getting low and they'd be paying less.
Yeah.
What was happening to you?
Well, the first I realised, I had I think a 9 or 10 grand interest payment left my account and went to the RBS and do my monthly accounts. I couldn't work out where this 9 grand had come from. So, you know, call the RBS. They informed me that it was one of these swap payments. But we were all of the opinion, well, you know, might last 6 months or something. 3.5, 4 years down the line, we're still in the same situation.
But Des O'Malley's problems didn't just end with higher payments as rates fell. His swap agreement with RBS was set for 10 years, while his loan was only for 5. And when RBS opted not to renew his loan last year because of his rising debts, not only did Des have to find the money to pay back his loan, he was also stuck with a bill of £260,000 in what are known as breakage costs to pay off his swap early.
I've remortgaged everything that can be remortgaged, and family and friends have helped me just to get away and just have some kind of certainty going forward. And I've been able to overborrow, over-leverage to clear off the breakage costs with the RBS. But that's meant I've had to move my loan to value from 45, 50% up to 75 and 80%.
So it says here that Des had to pay £250,000 to get out of his agreement. But what would have happened if he hadn't done that?
Well, he'd have had to carry on paying out on his swap for another 5 years.
Even though he would have paid off the actual loan?
Yeah, kind of like paying insurance on a car he'd already sold.
But what would have happened if the RBS had agreed to renew his loan?
Well, this is where it gets even worse. The bank actually had the option to cancel the swap after 5 years anyway, and every quarter after that.
Which is surely what the bank would have done if the rates had started to move in Des's favour and gone up by that point.
Well, that's exactly what Martin Barclay of Vedanta Hedging reckons would have happened.
If interest rates are rising, and let's say the client's fixed at 5%, and they rise to 10%, the bank is not going to say, we're going to leave you in there because we think you're a great guy. They're going to cancel it straight away. It isn't actually a hedge beyond that five-year point. So I can't see any reason why the bank would actually want to sell one of these, apart from to maximise its profit.
But the whole point about this swap is that it's sold as protection to the customer against interest rates going up. But you're saying actually after 5 years this product doesn't offer that protection at all?
Let's say you insured your house against fire risk and the insurance company had the option to cancel it if your house burned down. That's what effectively is happening after the 5 years. So, no, it's not protection at all.
We asked RBS about Des O'Malley's case. In a statement, they told us,
we have procedures in place to ensure these products are sold in accordance with regulations. Any customer who feels procedures have not been followed should contact the bank. After investigating Mr. O'Malley's concerns fully, the bank found no justification for the complaints raised. This was explained in writing in September 2011, also notifying the customer they could refer their complaint to the Financial Ombudsman Service if they were dissatisfied with our decision.
Most small businesses, like Des O'Malley's, will have been introduced to the idea of hedging by their local bank manager before being referred to salesmen from the investment side of the bank. This blurred what Sir Mervyn King last night called the crucial distinction between essential retail banking services on the one hand and the complex and risky trading that investment banks engage in on the other. The involvement of the local bank manager in the process would have encouraged the perception that what small businesses were being offered was in their best interests. Although they might have been under the impression they were being offered advice, the small print says otherwise. And that's because the regulator, the FSA, applies much tougher rules where advice is given. James Ducker is another former poacher turned gamekeeper, formerly of Lloyds and Bank of Scotland, but now of Benchmark Treasury Pricing, which works with businesses pursuing mis-selling claims.
Essentially, we're salesmen, and our job was to sell as much as possible for as big a profit as possible. The customers never knew that because we never put salesmen on our business cards. Certain banks went out wanting to be known as advisors. Their business cards said they were advisors. The presentations talked about advisory services. And yet, within the confirmation, hidden in the background in the disclaimer, the bank says they weren't giving advice. In my opinion and my experience, we knew we were giving advice. We knew the customer was relying on us. And therefore, they should, the banks, that is, hold their hands up now, admit they were giving advice, admit that they've done wrong in many of these instances, not all of them, and move on with compensation.
Lloyds told us interest rate swaps weren't a product they sold widely, with about 90% of their commercial customers wanting to fix their interest doing so with a fixed rate loan. The banks say the agreements businesses sign with them do recommend in the small print that they seek independent advice. But given the specialist nature of many of these products, how realistic was it that even small businesses with the foresight to seek a second opinion would find anyone with the appropriate expertise? J.C. Rathbone Associates is one of the very few risk management specialists in the market, primarily advising large private equity firms and real estate companies, but not small businesses. Its managing director is John Edwards.
It may well have been that they weren't properly advised about the downside risks of entering into those swaps, whatever they were. On the basis that there are very few independent advisors in the retail sector, then it's highly likely that they weren't given better advice than they received from their bankers.
We've been talking to businesses who were sold these products, say, back in 2006, 2007. I think there are a few advisors out there now for businesses of that size, but can you recall back then whether there would have been many in the market?
You'd have to ask the FSA if there were any registered, but I think the answer is there were none.
None at all?
I think that's the case.
And yet pretty much all these agreements would say at some point that it would be an idea for any small business signing up to them that they should get independent financial advice.
Correct.
This lack of available advice for small businesses meant the banks were in a much stronger position than their customers when it came to negotiating. And James Ducker says when he worked at Lloyds, fellow salesmen would seek to maximise the bank's profit at the customer's expense, even for seemingly trivial incentives.
There was one time when my team got a bottle of champagne, the whole team, that is, for anybody that made over £100,000 in a deal. And that drove us, because that changed our mindset. If a deal was only going to make £80,000 or £90,000, all of a sudden you made sure it just tipped over the £100,000. It wasn't considered a big deal. It wasn't considered a real problem. But looking back, of course it was, because it skewed the market even further against the customer.
But how would you do that? I mean, how can you go from making an £80,000 profit on a swap to making over £100,000? How does that work?
You just change the price that you're offering the customer. If it's a 5% swap and you're offering 5.2, offer 5.25. Just increase the margin slightly.
We wanted to speak to someone at Lloyds about James Ducker's claims, but they sent us a statement instead which said,
"We note that Mr. Ducker has only raised these issues when it's in his current business vested interest to do so, and as such we do not believe his comments can be considered impartial. Nevertheless, we take all such allegations seriously, and we would always suggest that customers with any concerns come to us direct, as we are keen to resolve them wherever possible."
James Ducker wants the Financial Services Authority to investigate his claims. The FSA told us they're considering information they've been given by the banks and customers affected, and if they find widespread evidence of breaches or mis-selling, they'll take appropriate action. The banks may be facing some awkward questions about their conduct, but not everyone believes all small businesses currently complaining are blameless. Many will have taken advantage of very competitive rates on their loans as a result of signing up to hedging products without stopping to think why the deal was so good. And derivatives expert and author Shortajit Das thinks some of those currently crying foul may just be sore they lost their bet as rates have fallen.
Generally, in my experience, and I have acted as experts in cases around the world, what happens is the average client who has gone into a transaction which has lost money then turns around and says, "Oh, I didn't understand, the bank misrepresented the actual position." However, I would make two observations about that. The first is the average IQ of the client drops by about 100 points when he loses money, because it immediately becomes, "I didn't understand." And on the other side is, if they've made money, I've never heard a complaint. So it's kind of difficult to dissemble this particular set of clients to say who's at fault. I always use the analogy, it's like two pickpockets. They're trying to pick each other's pocket. Who do you hold responsible?
We may not know how big a problem this alleged mis-selling is until a case makes it all the way before a judge, without the accused bank settling beforehand. And insiders told us this has already happened in dozens of cases. If the banks lose a case, they face the prospect of a mass payout. If they win, it could stop further claims in their tracks. But the banks aren't just facing legal challenges from small businesses in the UK. Public sector institutions across Europe and the US are also taking action after signing up for deals that went badly wrong.
Wall Street banks are pimping the city for $5 million a year. What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
In America, trade union activists like these from Oakland in California have protested against the millions of dollars of public money that's been lost on interest rate swaps. Amongst the worst affected areas is Jefferson County in the state of Alabama. County bosses there signed up for hundreds of millions of dollars in swaps on borrowings they'd made to build a new sewer system. But Sheila Tyson, a local activist, says as these deals turned sour, they left residents with soaring sewer rates, and many people can't afford to pay.
We have right now 1,500 people in Jefferson County that do not have access to water, and some of them are getting porta toilets. You can't live in a house without running water. It's a health hazard. And the health department came in. They gave them 90 days to get the porta toilets out of their yards and get the water on, or they would be evicted. So that would put them in a homeless category.
And has that happened?
Yes, it has. We still are suffering off of something that we had absolutely nothing to do with.
What happened in Jefferson County may be extreme, but it has echoes of what befell some small businesses in the UK. Just as they signed up for hedging products in order to secure competitive rates on their loans, municipal governments in the US did the same to bring down their borrowing costs. But derivatives expert Shortajit Das says when the Federal Reserve cut rates in 2008, these deals proved to be the county's downfall.
Unfortunately, what happened was in the global financial crisis, certain things went wrong. And a combination of factors basically led to Jefferson County owing literally hundreds of millions of dollars to banks, which they couldn't find. And essentially, recently, after a very prolonged period of a number of years, Jefferson County has finally filed for bankruptcy. And this just shows the connection between these arcane instruments and real life. Because basically, Jefferson County now, as a bankrupt entity, doesn't have money to perform its fundamental activities.
In 2008, when Jefferson County defaulted on the payments on its interest rate swaps, its bank, JP Morgan, cancelled its agreement, triggering cancellation fees of more than $600 million. Following an investigation by the regulator, the Securities and Exchange Commission, those costs were written off. But the whole episode has left Jefferson County mired in debt. Across the pond, several local authorities in Italy have also taken legal action to try to avoid heavy losses on their derivatives. So what do these cases have to do with small businesses in the UK? Even institutions as large as the City of Milan have argued that the risks of interest rate swaps weren't properly explained to them. So it's little wonder that Wahida Bashir's family butchers in East London didn't grasp what their amortising collar with knock-in digital floor meant for their business until it was too late.
It's my mum and dad and our life. We built it up from scratch and literally all our life been taken away from us. And I just can't do no more and I feel a total failure. This has just totally crippled us.
There are some signs the banks may be acknowledging they have a problem with interest rate swaps. At last Friday's Barclays AGM, the bank's chief executive, Bob Dimon, told shareholders he could guarantee in some cases they'd made mistakes, and that was bound to happen when they did thousands of transactions. He said there was only a very small number of transactions in dispute, but where there had been mistakes, they'd own up to it and fix it. With the base rate stuck at 0.5%, for many small businesses, that can't happen soon enough.
That edition of the report was presented by Phil Kemp. The producer was Smita Patel.